Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to talk about a journey through life, a journey through struggles, a journey through living a life well-lived. Can we say we've done that? Can we say we've run from things? Can we say we've made peace with things? Do we have regrets? Have we really gotten out there and just enjoyed and encompassed every bit of our life? And how are we coming full circle with things? You know, I myself have said on this radio show many times, I live my life with eyes wide open. I have no regrets. If you could go back, I'd say, why? And if they said, what would you change? I'd say, there's nothing to change. And they'd say, well, what do you want going forward? And I'll say, I'm at peace in this moment. And I would always say that I would touch life with my finger just to see what would be response. Isn't that interesting to see how we could live our life with our eyes wide open and just say, I have this moment. Enjoy this moment because you can really find that peace and love in this moment. And this really is all that is guaranteed to everyone. And I think it's very important to understand that because there is, while we might have labels, we might have legacies, we might have things that we would say, I have to get to this point, I have to have this letter behind my name, I have to accomplish this because, and I think once we hit that word because, we need to just stop and say, I'm good. I love, I can honor, I am with people I love, I'm good to go. I think that's what we focus on every single day, and I think every single day that gives us a wealth of emotions and a wealth of feelings and a wealth of accomplishment in how we spend each day. Today, my guest is Michael Becker. His book is A Walk with Purpose, Memoir of a Bio-Entrepreneur. And Michael is going to be sharing about his life, all 360, and it is a life well lived. And I think it's very important also to listen and hear his story all the way through and say, you know, I understand things a little bit more. And as we all share our life stories, that's the quest of this radio show. Michael, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Dr. Jeanette, thank you for the opportunity.
So, Michael, I think your book is a really great story, A Walk with Purpose, and you'll share with us as how that topic even came about, because right in the beginning, we could start with that. It's your father had said that you to walk with purpose when you first started out on your path, yes?
Yeah. I was working, he was the chief financial officer of the company that I was at, and I was walking through the office distributing reports one day, and he pulled me aside and said, walk with purpose, and he said it, you know, in kind of a stern voice, and I didn't really understand what he meant by, you know, walk with purpose, and the more he saw that I was confused, the more he clarified that, you know, if you look as though you're going across the room, you know, and kind of sauntering, it gives the impression that you're maybe lazy or, you know, not motivated. Whereas if you walk from one side of the room to the other, like you were late for a meeting, people might view you differently as you're important. And I thought that was a very interesting, you know, piece of insight, and it really made me start to think about how we're viewed by other people and how our actions or our movements are sometimes a signal to what we're thinking or what we're doing at the time.
You know, and I think when I hear the words walk with purpose in your description of your story, I really see it as to walk with being present in the moment, to trust all that you are, and really to be to have that confidence within yourself that you are, you know, in the present moment, and that you are showing your authentic self. You are really truly showing that this is where you're meant to be, more or less, I think.
I think understanding and being who you are and embracing your individuality, that's, to me, that's the real message behind Walk with Purpose. I think you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, you know, I think sometimes we say, you know, that whole story, fake it till you make it, and I always say to people, don't ever do that, because fake it till you make it, you're creating that persona outside of yourself, and it isn't you. And if you think that you're going to fake it till you make it to some place, some person, some being, some echelon, you can go ahead and do that, but eventually all of your systems will kaput. And as we'll share, you know, later in your book, you came to that point when all of those other things were changing and shifting and everything just went to kaput, and you said, okay, now what? And what happens is you come back to the essence of you again. So really, you know, when we say fake it till you make it, no, I think really when, I think it's quite it's very thought-provoking when you say walk with purpose. It's because it really, to be within your authentic self is so vitally important.
Absolutely.
You know, so Michael, I think, you know, you've had such an exciting life as you share it. You were very, your book is really great. Again, the book is A Walk with Purpose. And it tells about all of the places that you've gone and the things you have done. And really, you have reached out on life and said, you know, gosh, I don't know what's coming down the pike, but I'm willing to take a chance and a risk. And I think that that's really important as we share your life path. Yes?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
You know, we can also talk about your major focus on this is to share about HPV, oral pharyngeal cancer, and also to talk about the purpose of the vaccine early in life and your experience with this cancer. And it's interesting to see the correlation with your health walk along with your professional walk, yes?
Yes, absolutely. There's a very strong connection.
And don't you think that, you know, and it's funny because on page 61 of your book, you talk about when you were younger, and there was one short sentence there, and it says your thoughts and emotions could actually guide your journey. And I think probably all of your thoughts and emotions that you had along your journey of, you know, with your work and your experiences that you had, they turned out and played out, you know, in your health crisis.
Yes, yeah. I think that, you know, at the end of the day, I looked back at my life and said, you know, this is something that I want to write about at some point in time, but I never really viewed either myself or, you know, my career as so interesting that it would be a, you know, New York Times bestseller or anything like that.
Right.
And then you get cancer.
Yeah.
And suddenly, you know, it creates a different twist. And for me, it was very almost cathartic to go back and write about my earlier days, you know, before cancer, and following that career path to the current day. It was interesting to see how many connections there were along that way.
And, you know, I think that's important. You know, I myself have tons of those. I would say something to someone and feel that I had no influence whatsoever. 10-20 years later, they would say to me, oh, you know that thing that you told me? And it's like, well, I have no clue what I said. I don't remember what I had for breakfast. But, okay, then, you know, and they're saying, well, yeah, well, I took it here, and this is what I did with it. So I think your story, while it's your entire life in a, quote, book, it is also an expansive time where we could share about how our stories play out. So others can also share about how their stories play out. I think everyone's life is a story, and it's just, you know, and till we, you know, have the time to sit back and reflect on how great things were, but how things were hard or things were challenging, or just actually put it on paper and map it out, we really don't see how the puzzle pieces fit together.
And that's exactly what I learned after writing the book. For me, it was a real sense of closure, because it helped me kind of piece together my life and see how all of those very various puzzle pieces came together.
Yeah. You know, on page 123 of your book, it says, "Sorry, my crystal ball has a hairline fracture." So apparently we never know where life is going to go. We just have to play it out, right?
Well, you got to embrace change. I mean, I think that the more you accept that change and growth are inseparable, you can learn to embrace change. And that's really, you know, what I did at each obstacle. Just say, okay, there's a change. I'm going to go left or I'm going to go right. Either way, you know, that's life. That's what we're constantly faced with.
Where are you currently right now within your health challenge?
I'm currently being treated at the National Institutes of Health with an experimental cancer vaccine. So my cancer is advanced. It spread to my lungs. And that's, you know, a poor prognostic factor for this disease.
But also you're here today, Michael, gracing us with your words, yes?
Yeah, and that's, you know, people ask why why I'm so positive or why I have so much openness about my disease and the condition and going back through some of the earlier days in the memoir. And it's really because I've had a good life. I don't have any regrets. I didn't ever live a day without really getting the most from it. And so would I like more time? Obviously, yes.
Right.
But I have no regrets. I have no, there's nothing that I didn't do that I wanted to do. And it's great to, you know, kind of have that peace of mind.
And also, too, you shared in your book about facing fears. Cancer is a fear. Just as well as other smaller things are to other people that they have fears about doing, but also, too, about walking through those fears. You know, we've spoken many times about, in this show, about end of life and times, and people would say, I have a fear of dying, or we have a fear of letting go, or I have a fear I didn't talk to somebody, or I have a fear of regrets, or I have fear of this. But I think once we come to the place of peace, then we can still start living. I mean, we aren't going toward a path of dying, which everybody has that path. And depending on, I mean, nobody knows how many days that could be. It could be day, week, hours, or months, or years. So I think really about learning how to live in the moment is really where we should all be focusing rather than fearing the potential. Yes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's always knocking on the door. It just gets louder and louder as the years go by.
Yeah, I think it's for everybody, though. You know, things happen. This is life. But to, as you shared in your book, is just in the moment is to be very present with that moment, because that if that's all that's guaranteed to you, you know, we really have to hold that, I think.
I completely agree. I think that's very insightful.
Let's share a little bit about, you know, I think it was interesting when you had spoken in your book about the biotech company, and they were using neonatal cells from the neonatal foreskins, and that's, you know, we look at that, and then we relate that to HPV. Many times, you know, we say that those two are correlated, and we say, in other words, is it sexually transmitted? Is it not sexually transmitted? What is HPV? Where does it come from? How does it affect our body? But yet you delved into that. And then there was another time in here, too, where you were also using a product. I'm sorry, you were working with a product, and you ended up having to use that product as a patient. So I think your walk through the cancer the cancer corporation life, the cancer research life, the cancer development life, and all that you've done has kind of given you a background where you knew how to work through your own life and to say, these are the choices I'd like to make. I know how to research. I know which place is best for me and how to get yourself into that place.
Yeah, and it's kind of difficult because you always want to, you know, have somebody walk away with reading your book and getting something out of it. And the one thing that I really wanted to give the reader that I just found impossible is exactly, you know, all the things that I learned through my experiences have helped me, but I can't give that experience, that 20 years of experience to another person. And, you know, it's really, it's hard for me to understand how somebody without that navigates the cancer diagnosis.
Right.
It really is a, it's a maze between the healthcare system, the financial aspects, the emotional aspects, the job impact. It's a lot.
You know, I think you share your story, and you are one person. And what we've always spoken about is that everybody has an individual story and an individual process. I think where some people get totally locked up, disappointed, regretful, angry, is when they start feeling that they needed to command or demand to have a reproducible story in their life when that story wasn't meant for them. They were meant to create their own story. They weren't meant to replicate someone else's story, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's so important because we see that now playing out in healthcare where I demand care, I demand this, I demand that. But yet, if you heard the backstory of each and every person, every single one is totally different.
Absolutely.
You know, so I think it's kind of tough, you know, when people say that and they say, well, that's what I want. But I think it's important to read your story and then to have others turn around and say, how does it play out in my life? I think it's also true about when you talked about things in your life and you said that you struggled very hard to preserve and grow things. Is that more when you were looking for a legacy that you wanted to leave?
Yeah, and that's, I think, maybe the natural question you ask yourself when put in the position of having a terminal disease is, you know, what did I leave at the end of the day? And I, you know, of course, have two lovely daughters, so, you know, I could be content just with that. I have a great wife and house and all that, but, you know, there a lot of those then transcend into, you know, more material things. But I... You know, I think that, you know, very, very fortunate to have a lot of different things to kind of look back and say that's my legacy. But it's a question that everybody asks themselves, I think, at that time.
Oh, I think so, too. You know, and I think also, too, at the end of that same page, you had said about your wife, Lori, and that you said, but for some reason, she truly loved me. And I think really what you were looking at was an example of unconditional love that she had. And then were you able to have that also for yourself? I think sometimes it's so hard. We can see people around us that love us, but can we have that love for ourselves?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I've tried to experience some new things lately just to, well, number one, pass the time. Number two, help, you know, with the current situation. And one of them was taking a class on transcendental meditation. And that really has kind of brought me a lot closer to, I think, what you're getting at is really, you know, unconditional love for yourself or understanding yourself.
Yeah, I think sometimes we just want to say that we were okay, that we were loved and cared for and heard. If we can just get those few concepts under our belt, the rest will just fall into place. And I think so many times the stories that we play in our life is when we're fighting because we are grasping for that, we're looking for that, we can't find that, or we think that something or a job or a profession is going to give you that love, it's going to give you that support, it's going to give you that care. It's going to bring that to you. But that really is not outside of you. It's really inside of you. But I think it really comes through in your entire book. Again, the book we're talking about today with Michael Becker is A Walk with Purpose, that you do have that throughout the book. I think it's just once you put it down in paper, it sort of shines through on many times and in many phrases. So I thank you for sharing that with your story.
Thank you very much. It was kind of interesting to me when I started writing some of the earlier days, you know, being a CEO of a biotech company and, you know, doing well financially and, you know, having a family. All of that was great, but that point in my life was nearly close to the bottom emotionally. So the demands of the job and not being able to spend time with the family and all the other pressures, goes to support the old adage that money doesn't buy happiness.
Yeah, I think many times I've said to myself, am I going to sell my soul for this, or am I going to keep myself intact? And myself is my soul and my inner spirit. And if I sell my soul, then I end up being a shell of myself, you know? So I think sometimes we sell ourselves for a job, a profession, for being able to go up that ladder, up the totem pole, or whatever it might be, and always with that word because, or it's going to be okay because, every time we have to use that word, we just don't want to use it anymore, And I think so it brings us to that different place,
Absolutely.
When I looked in your book also, too, when you worked on one of your later companies around 2011 or so, and some of your friends had passed away, I think that you were talking about it there, but I almost had a feeling that you were feeling that you were starting to work to save someone. In other words, to be able to save people so they didn't, quote, end up like your friends. Might that be something that was something in the back of your thoughts?
It's an interesting point, yeah. I think it was because, it was one thing to rise to the level of being the head of a biotech company,
mm-hmm.
especially one that was, trying to diagnose and treat cancer. But to me, it was, at that time, it was more of a business. And I looked at the business side of it, and it wasn't until, you start being touched personally by cancer, losing a friend, losing a family member, that
right.
It becomes a lot more real. And I do think that my mindset shifted at that point to, what am I doing to impact on that, or what is our company doing to impact on that, and trying to get more involved with that. And even now, as a patient, trying to help,
mm-hmm.
Communicate to others who are maybe newly diagnosed or just starting to go through it.
Also, too, I don't know if you've come to this. I came to this myself. This is about 12 years ago. The point that I can't save anyone but myself. Being as a doctor myself, it was to the point where, guys, I can't save everybody's life. We can impact it. We can share. We can guide them along the path, but we cannot, quote, save everyone. And I think we get stuck in that, at times because we feel that what we're working for and towards is something that will do that, right? Do you think?
Yeah, it actually kind of brings to mind when you go on an airplane and they talk about should the pressure drop and you need the air mask to put yours on first,
right.
So that you can help others. We tend to in life, I think, very much not put on our masks first.
Yeah, and especially when you're doing these great cancer drugs that are going to, we believe, stop it, stop cancer so that we don't have cancer going forward, or to cure it. And when we see things that will, that are a step forward, but then they start to fail, or a few people will get helped and then they fail, and then all of this. And then I think that puts up a sense of, it's kind of a hard thing to have happen. Yes?
It is, and it's, for me, maybe it's just one of those things that once you're diagnosed, you start seeing the word or seeing the topic a lot more. But when I watch television, you're just bombarded with, this
mm-hmm.
disease and that disease and this treatment and that treatment. And if you just take those, commercials at face value, you think that we're on the verge of curing cancer.
Right.
And that's just not the reality. And I do think that's really hard. I mean, I'm certainly very close to the industry, so I know the realities a little bit more, but I think it's really providing false hope to a lot of people that kind of take that for gospel.
Yeah, I think it's also, too, not sharing and being honest and vulnerable in life. So your book is sharing about being honest and vulnerable in life, because if you're not, I think a lot of times, I have written a book and an article at one time, and they said you needed to put more fluff in it. And I said, so what is fluff? And they said you need to make it more engaging for the people. In other words, I said, well, so you're asking me to embellish? And they said, yes. And I said, well, that's not something I was willing to do because I really believed that it should be honest. It should be straightforward because then people are able to say, you know, I trust the honesty. I can hear it. I can feel it. And it also connects with me. Versus all this other fluff is what we see outside of ourselves again, you know, that false sense of ourselves.
That's interesting that you say that because I worked, this is obviously my first time doing a novel or a book, so I worked with a consulting editor, and mm-hmm. we had many a discussion about, you know, the book and how it would play out and mapping out the outlines and things like that. And from day one, I wanted it to be a very honest, truthful portrait of my life, and it wasn't going to, you know, and it was interesting because he raised the same side to that. Well, you know, maybe you should take the story here, or maybe you should go to this point. And I'm going, you know, it just didn't feel real. Some of the dialogue didn't feel real, and so I'm extremely proud that this is literally, this is me. There's no, you know, my wife certainly, you know, encouraged me to not put in, for example, that that I dropped out of high school and went back and got my GED and then went to college and, you know, talking about those types of things. And I said, but that's me. That, you know,
that's
a part of who I am. It shaped my journey. And, you know, you have to be, you know, I think open about that to understand the person.
Yeah, I think it's so important because, you know, without that, it really doesn't show the heart and the soul, you know. It doesn't show that deep connection. I mean, when I read through your book, you know, I mean, and your book is 400 and some pages. Let me tell you, it was, I was going through it and I said, this is a big book. I'm never going to get through it. But I just kept going and kept going because it draws you in. It's not something that you say, oh, I kind of lost track or I'm not sure where it's going or... Because it always had something else to prove. It had something else to say. And even as I spoke to you before we started the show today, normally I read everybody's book for the show, and I will write things in the side and tab down pages and fold pages over, knowing to what I wanted to talk to and focus on today. And there's some books, you know, I will get to maybe the first 20, 30 pages, and I'll have all that tabbed down and all. But then the rest of the book is like, it was more like justification for the first 10 pages. And yours wasn't. I mean, I have pages flipped all the way through your book, you know, and I thought that's very important because really what that shows is that you've learned along the way. You've shared ideas along the way. You've shared thoughts along the way. They kept showing up at those specific times in your life. And it kind of keeps you, you know, going through the book to be able to say, I understand the journey versus you stating in the front, hey, man, you know, I'm this, and this, and this is what we're going to do, and then justifying it. You didn't do that at all. So I thank you for keeping it that way because I think it is so, you know, to the listeners, if you just take your time, you will hear the underlying thread of really a life well lived, yes?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's extremely high praise, so thank you very much, Dr. Jeanette. It was, I think, very well received to have it be that transparent because it shows there's, you know, complete honesty throughout the book.
And there's
purpose. So it's I'm glad that it came out and that it reads that way. And a lot of people, I don't necessarily read a lot of books mm-hmm. or read often, but what I've been told is that it's a fast read or an easy read.
Right.
And maybe part of it is what you're you know, talking about, that it kind of transitions from interesting new topic to interesting new topic.
You know, but also, too, if you look at what we just said, being your title, Walk with Purpose, the book is the Walk with Purpose. So,
absolutely.
So the lifetime was, it wasn't the way in which you appear to others. It was the walk in which you existed in your life.
Correct.
Yeah, kind of cool. So let's talk about Michael a little bit about the cancer journey, because I know you'd like to share about the connection, and from all of your biotech information about all of your companies and things that you've done and everything, I know you'd like to share a really good mission, and I think we could start on that.
Sure. So the interesting thing for me was, you see a lot of people with cancer, and you see how many people are affected, and you never think it's going to happen to you. And
right.
when it did for me, it was really hard to get my arms around, not so much the fact that I had cancer, but the fact that I had gotten the cancer from a virus that most people are, able to fend off, the human papillomavirus.
Mm-hmm.
So, today there are vaccines available to prevent HPV and therefore prevent the cancers that it causes. That vaccine wasn't available when I was a child. So unfortunately, what could have prevented my cancer didn't exist at the time. But my message to people is to talk to their physician, and it's a very personal decision, but talk to their physician if they have children about the HPV vaccine. It's just very much underutilized at this point in time, and it's a shame because there's 30,000 cancers a year that could be prevented.
Yeah, there's a lot of cancers out there, but then everybody will have the argument about when you give this vaccine. I think we sometimes say when the kids are in their teens, their body is growing so fast, they have so much other stuff going on and everything, and do we really want to give it in their teens? And then also to the concept of, can the HPV vaccine be given at a different time in life? Is it still effective? Is it not? And also, should it be a part of someone else's journey to be able to get that at a different time?
Yeah, I mean, the one concern is that you're enabling the teen to become sexually active because you're giving them
right.
a vaccine that prevents something that's transmitted that way. But the flip side is, would the child be sexually active anyway, or
mm-hmm.
can this be spread through non-sexual means? There's
right.
a whole theory that with the oral head and neck cancer, oral HPV, that actually can be transmitted other ways, through saliva, for example. And there's just not enough research available today to determine whether that's the case or not. So you've got a disease that you really don't understand in terms of how it's capable of spreading. and a vaccine that can prevent it, and 80 million people in the United States that currently have it. So it's no wonder that we get about 14 million new patients a year with the HPV.
I was a dental hygienist for 35 years, and I can tell you in the 70s when I started dental hygiene, what we did in school then was that was when they still had the drill and stuff was on the rope that, kind of went around your head. They didn't have the power ones at that time. And anyway, so it was a long time ago. And, we never wore masks. We never wore protective gear. We didn't even wear gloves in the office. I mean, when we were cleaning teeth at all, because that just was not the protocol in the early 70s. And then I look back and I say, okay, well, what happened then? And then we look at it. It was AIDS. AIDS came up in the 80s. And then it was, we just have to put up our hands and we need to start putting everything with plastic. Everything in the entire office is covered in plastic. Pick it all up, throw it all out, do it all over again. And I think we kind of got scared of, quote, viruses because we didn't know what viruses were. We didn't know what they did. We didn't know where they came from, how they could be transmitted. All we knew was we couldn't do something with a virus because we likened it to the cold. We haven't cured the cold. Well, how the heck are we going to cure diseases coming from these other viruses, So I think that kind of kept people on the point of deciding a virus is what and why do I need a vaccine when there are no, quote, cures for viruses. So I think sometimes people have these dogma kind of ritualistics in their heads where they play out these sort of correlations And that's how they make their decisions. Do I get that other vaccine the doctor's talking about or not? They'll say, oh, it's a virus, a cold is a virus, whatever, you know. So people, while the internet has really sparked our interest in learning more versus the old-time libraries, you know, where you'd have to go down the corner and read the old books that were in there because that was the only way you could get information. Now it's like there's so much information out there now. You kind of have no reason for making a choice based upon your old stories. You really have to make your new decisions based upon what's out there, boom, 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 every single day because things are changing every day, right?
Yeah, and I don't think it's fair to expect a physician to be able to digest all of that. So I think that while some people or while some physicians don't like patients playing, you know, what they call Dr. Google, you know, by searching for all their medical ailments or, you know, treatments, I think that that should be viewed as just having an extra set of eyes on something that,
right,
you know, is rapidly changing. I think it should be viewed positively, not negative. And many physicians do. I've been fortunate to have many of them that embrace my ability to put 2 cents into, you know, the cancer situation.
And I think it's also about knowing your own body and being able to say, I have a sense, I have a feeling, this is what I need, and how to get up and go out there and get that. Because through your story you also share, I mean, you really had to be proactive in your process, because if you're not like anybody else is going to be, right?
No, it's almost, you know, I've said often that there almost needs to be a cottage industry come up that, you know, patient advocate that, you know, kind of plays the intermediary between a patient and the medical community, because there is, you know, so much information, so much decision making. You know, it's very hard, I think, for any one person to fully embrace or understand their condition.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, myself, you know, being the patient advocate, that's what I do with clients, is be able to help them understand what's going on, what's being said, and then be able to rephrase it so they can make better decisions. I think sometimes we don't even understand, you know, that going forward, how can we ask for something when we don't even know what we need to ask for. You know, I mean, I'm sure you've come across this where you may have been presented with something and you'd say, hey, you know, I see, hear what you're saying, but I think I would like to try this other path. And you kind of steered yourself off of their path onto one that would be more beneficial for you.
And again, it goes back to, I fully realize how lucky I am to be in a position to make those decisions or have that knowledge base. I just struggle with how we can have more people in that same position, you know, because that it's so important.
Yeah. Let's share a little bit about your photography work. You talk about this just, I saw it once in the beginning of the book, but then I saw it again really close to the end. And you talked about your hardcover version of your Strength, Confidence, and Beauty book. You know, I think that that's important because what that has shown is that you do believe in the perfection of the body, and, you know, you just want to honor the grace of the body and just show that people have strength and to show that people are showing up. Do you know what I mean? In other words, it's just showing them in their honesty and in their moment. And it really, taking us back to a walk with purpose, it's really how you stand in that moment. So your book is really, how are they standing in that moment? And what you found,
yeah,
you know, strengthen the confidence.
It's a very interesting link, yeah. Yeah, it's a very interesting link between the photography book and the memoir. It, you know, over the, I don't know, past 3 years or so, I really focused on photography as a hobby and did a lot of work on the weekends. And my family was very patient. Many of the subjects are female, some of them, you know, scantily clad and things like that. So they were always very supportive of, you know, this was an artistic, not a, you know, anything else type of endeavor. But I really wanted to kind of show what over 3 years kind of came together as a cohesive body of, you know, portraits that really showcased women in different elements, being strong, being beautiful, or just being comfortable, being confident. So it was great to have that come out as well. That those are my two bucket list items, the memoir and the photo book.
Now, also you talked about in the last pages of the book, when you said that your wife had said that the happiest day of her life was when she got married. And really, I think that what she's really saying is also true, that each day is a happy day. Because I think when you have that connection with someone, that gets reproduced. You know what I mean? So in other words, if you believe that with your spouse or someone that you're with, that it's the happiest day of your life, it's just showing that you can feel, you know what that feels like. Sometimes people go in this life and they're devoid of that that ultimate feeling of love or that unconditional feeling of love. But you've shared it many times throughout your book with your wife, Lori, you know, and you may not even have noticed it in some of the things you say, but you could feel it, and when you sense it, so that you know that once you've had that experience, you keep wanting that and you keep finding it in different ways. So it kind of ekes out through your pages.
Well, and it's interesting because it surprises me all the time. I found it absolutely beautiful that after being married for 25 years and after watching our wedding videotape probably at least once each of those years, this most recent time, which was after my cancer diagnosis, I saw that she laughed and smiled the entire day throughout the day.
Right.
Every single, even, you know, during the ceremony when, you know, probably she shouldn't have been, she
right.
was just, you know, giggling, looking at her dad, and she was just in the moment. That was, you know, she was happy and she wasn't afraid to show it. And it amazed me that after so much time, you know, being right in front of me, that was something that I really didn't grasp onto or recognize.
Yeah, I think sometimes when we look back and we reflect, we can see we always look at things from the outside. It's sort of like, oh, that's a pretty birthday cake. You know, it has all my favorite colors and it smells good. But you forget to understand that maybe it's the third one your mother had to make because maybe something happened with the other two. And, you know, she was in a real rush and maybe she had to go buy this at the bakery. Do you know what I'm saying? So in other words, you didn't have the feeling or the sense behind it of the energy that went into it, you know. Like, so that video really showed you about how the energy of behind her, how she felt, how she moved, how she talked, how she sensed, but you couldn't see it because you were still in your space, you know. So it's good to connect with that.
No, it was a beautiful, really beautiful moment. And it, you know, like I said, it's one of many, especially, you know, going back and writing the memoir, you know, one of many moments that I recognized, you know, she does just, you know, love me and unconditionally so, and it's truly a beautiful thing.
And that's really what we're here for, period. If we ever think that there's so much more, we weren't made to make money. We didn't have to pay houses. We didn't have to do blah, 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 blah. You know what I'm saying? If it's really just to find love in the people with we're with and to enjoy the experience of life along the way, how simple that sounds, that really is our only path. But yet we put all this other confounding stuff around it and call that our life when it's really just stuff, right?
It is. It's either, you know, material or social status or, you know, other elements that cloud what's really important.
And clouds up your mind and your thoughts, and you can't even see. It's almost like that those old stories, you know, can you see the woods through the forest or whatever it is, or the tree, whatever that is, you know. and it's almost like that in a way because you just can't see through that. You know, and I think, Michael, it's very important, again, let's share in closing, is that your main purpose is really that I think you've really found, you know, you've had the walk with purpose. Your purpose was to find unconditional love. That's what I think your purpose was. And I think you found it because it says it on the last two pages. You know, it may have taken you a long time to get there, you got there because you were able to see it and reflect back on it. And I think that's really the purpose for your book. Yes?
Yeah, absolutely.
So So, Michael, can you share a little bit more how people could find out about the book? That would be wonderful.
Sure. Probably the easiest is on the internet, to just go to the book website, which is the title of the book. So it's www.awalkwithpurpose.com.
Michael, it's a pleasure to have you with us. I think your story will live on. I think your story is of light and love. I think your story is about a life well lived. I think your story is about all of that other stuff is just stuff. And I think it's also about the idea of not having fear, of being able to walk through life and taking every challenge as it comes. And I think that's a great legacy to leave.
Well, Dr. Jeanette, thank you so much for the time and, more importantly, for the insight that you've provided for a book that I wrote. It's been a very interesting discussion and enlightening for me in a very positive way.
Well, I thank you, and we honor you, and we thank you for sharing.
My pleasure.
If you'd like to find out more information about Michael Becker, and again, the book is A Walk with Purpose, Memoir of a Bio-Entrepreneur, please click on the bottom of today's show page and you'll go directly to the website to find out more information. And yes, it is very important to understand the healthcare profession is changing at warp speed. If you have something going on today or tomorrow, last week or last year, and you want to say what else is out there, get yourself a computer and hit Google. You need to really start checking up, checking out, seeing what's out there. It's the same as everybody else is doing. Let me tell you, being a physician myself, we hit Google. Being an entrepreneur, you hit Google. Everybody does, because that's where our source of reference is. That's where our source of information is. It's global, and it's all out there. So please do check things out. And please just say, you know what, if I'm afraid today, I'm going to be afraid today. If I'm sad today, I'm going to be sad today. If I'm scared today, I'm going to be scared today. And really, as we all say through the Advocate Service, is just reach out and touch someone else's hand, look into their eyes. That's really where the space of love and that connection is. So thank you so much for joining us today. It's such a pleasure. This is Dr. Jeanette, and until tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.